while the purple gang let rock.
Roger, my knowledge of Elvis is incredibly limited because it's just not the music I grew up with. I was 6 years old, I guess, when Elvis passed away. August of 77, right?
Right.
So, yeah, I was only 6 years old, so I never knew Elvis alive. I never really knew Elvis much at all.
Mm-hmm.
You were out in Vegas at the time when
right.
he passed away. You'd only been there for a year.
Yeah, about a year.
How big of a deal was that when Elvis passed away? Do you recall the time?
It was a huge deal when he passed away. Oh, my gosh. Yes. Extremely huge deal, not just in Las Vegas, but all over the world.
But I imagine in Las Vegas, since he had kind of reinvented himself there.
Right.
And really helped kind of
reinvent the Vegas show. He owned that town while he appeared there.
Yeah,
he literally owned it. When he passed away, there wasn't anyone really who had that kind of pull. There were big names on the strip, but not anyone who could constantly fill room. The showroom like he did on a consistent basis, sellouts, waiting lists. It was amazing. The town came alive when he was there.
Joining us on the phone right now is Richard Zoglin. He is the author of Elvis in Vegas, How the King Reinvented the Las Vegas Show. Richard, thanks so much for staying up late with us and jumping on. We appreciate it.
Sure. Great to be with you.
Thank you so much. So talk to us a little bit about... I loved reading about, because I was telling Roger, I don't know Elvis very well. I was 6 years old when he passed away, so I only know him through, you know, the histories. And I was thinking today as I'm reading your book that we've had such great biographies in the last 10 or 15 years. I think of the Johnny Cash movie, Walk the Line, and some other movies about famous people. We've got La Bamba about Richie Valens, and there's a lot of great biographies or biopics. And I don't know of a great Elvis biopic. He's this... weird legend that, like, maybe hasn't truly gotten his due for some reason.
Yeah. Well, there was a TV movie quite a few years ago. I think there's another one in the... There's a feature film in the works right now.
Okay.
There have been a lot of books about Elvis. You know, people... There have probably been more books about Elvis Presley than any other celebrity.
Really?
It's amazing. Yeah, all of his friends, his ex-girlfriends, his Priscilla wrote a book. Everybody has written a book. But what I did, I thought, you know, a lot of people think of Elvis in Las Vegas. It was kind of his waning years in some way. You know, he got a little overweight there near the end, and the drugs kind of kicked in. But boy... when he came back to Las Vegas in 1969, his comeback, after almost a decade of not performing live, doing no live performing, he made his big comeback in 1969 at the New International Hotel, and that was really the greatest show in Vegas history. He ran for 4 weeks, so seven nights a week, two shows a night. Who does two shows a night anymore?
That's the crazy thing, reading about that, is the way that these shows were set up. And I'm guessing part of that is because you talk about all the book is great because you have such a history of Vegas and entertainment in Vegas and how entertainment really came to be and how they would spend these outrageous amounts of money to get headliners. And the crazy thing to read about and think about is that they weren't even charging for the shows. They're paying outlandish sums to get the top entertainers to come there, and then it's just free. Just come on, on and see the show. And so they wanted them short, right? Because they wanted people to get back to making the money for them, right?
That's right. Of course, their business model, they had a great business model. It was, we can pay top dollar for the stars. We don't have to charge that much. The whole game is to get people into the hotels and into the casinos, and they made all their money back from the gambling. So that's why Vegas could pay more money than anywhere else for stars in the 50s and 60s. And, you know, it became the entertainment capital of America. But in the 60s, what happened was in the mid-60s, late 60s, when rock and roll came along, when the Beatles came along and the whole counterculture revolution in the late 60s, then Vegas was, after being so sort of the coolest place in show business, became not so cool anymore. And Sinatra and the Rat Pack were kind of the kings of Las Vegas in the early 60s. But by the late 60s, they were looking a little old-fashioned. And Vegas was not very comfortable with rock and roll. So finding Elvis and turning Elvis into a great Vegas attraction was a real great achievement and discovery for Vegas, because he was the first real solid rock and roller to play the big stage, the big showroom stage in Las Vegas. And he was just Vegas's biggest star for most of the 70s there. So it also was an important show for Vegas because it was a big. It was not a sort of small nightclub kind of intimate nightclub kind of show. The sort of show that traditionally the Sinatras and Dean Martins did in Las Vegas. It was a big rock concert like extravaganza, and that sort of set the stage for the new kind of Vegas that came along a couple decades later with people like Celine Dion and so forth and the new residencies.
Well, let's start with Elvis's first time in Vegas, because
yeah,
we think about when he came in 69 and those years and those outfits and Elvis gaining weight,
right.
And that's the picture of it that we have. And
right.
We know that there was a young Elvis who was on the stamp Elvis, who won the debate about who goes on the stamp and who was in the army and was this, you know, early on heartthrob.
Right.
And we don't know that he went to Vegas early on and it did not go so well.
Right. It was people don't remember, but he in 1956, which was Elvis's big year when he first came up with RCA, and he had one hit record at first, Heartbreak Hotel, and in April of 1956, when he had done a few TV shows, but he hadn't been on the Ed Sullivan Show yet, so he was still coming up. He was becoming a sensation, but he hadn't quite hit the peak, and he played Las Vegas. Colonel Parker, his manager, booked him into the New Frontier Hotel on a bill with Freddie Martin's orchestra and Shecky Green, if you can imagine that. And, you know, the Vegas sort of middle-aged nightclub crowd in Las Vegas who were used to Frank Sinatra and those kind of singers just didn't know what to make of this kid shaking his hips from Memphis. And he did not do well. But Elvis, you know, he loved Vegas. He kind of became his home away from home, became his favorite getaway. He would go there while he was shooting movies. He would go there after he was finished shooting for, you know, rest and relaxation with friends and stay up all night, go to shows. And he loved it. Then he made, of course, Viva Las Vegas there in 1963, which was the kind of the quintessential, the classic Vegas film. And he got married to Priscilla there at the Aladdin Hotel in 1967. So all through the 60s, as his career was kind of floundering a little, he was loving Las Vegas. So when it was time for him to come back, you know, to live performing, to make his comeback, Vegas was kind of a logical place for him to do it.
Well, and I imagine it makes sense why it didn't work the first time and why it did the second time. I'm guessing that a lot of it is who the crowd was at the time in Vegas. I mean, to be in Vegas,
sure.
You got to have some money to spend, right? And they got the casinos and stuff. And so it was an older crowd who probably were the parents of the kids who loved Elvis the first time through. But the second time through, the people that grew up loving Elvis are coming to Vegas now and spending their money,
I would think,
right?
Yeah, at the beginning, you know, in the 50s, rock and roll was teenage music, and it was teenagers who listened to it. There was a real split, you know, in the culture. The beat, rock and roll was for the kids, and the old-fashioned, the older kind of music was for the older folks. And by the late 60s, there was, you know, the young kids who had you know, screamed for Elvis when they were teenagers. Now they were in their 30s and they were having kids of their own. So, Elvis brought in also, you know, a new kind of crowd to Vegas. It was the people who came in 69 to see Elvis, and he got people from all over. They sold out, you know, 4 weeks, seven nights a week, two shows a night, every show sold out. And it was people who, you know, weren't necessarily Vegas, you know, goers. They weren't the big gamblers, the traditional kind of high rollers that Vegas catered to. They were, you know, middle America. They were families and you know, housewives who had screamed for Elvis when they were teenagers. And so it was a much broader kind of audience. And that was the audience that Vegas would eventually discover over the next couple of decades when it kind of went through its own reinvention and all the new hotels, the kind of theme park hotels and the Cirque du Soleil shows, and which now, you know, Vegas is a big family tourist destination.
Well, it's interesting to me. Vegas kind of comes and goes with the whole family thing, because I remember I don't know, 10 or 15 years ago when there were pirate ships out there and all this stuff, and Vegas was really going hardcore to a Disney-type destination. It seems to me that they then went away from that again, and you know, with the Maloof brothers and the Palms and different things like that, like maybe went back to, no, we need kids who want to come out here and party. It seems like Vegas is a little all over the place on it, or maybe it's a little something for everybody now. I'm not
sure. There's still, the pirate ships are still there, and it's still catering to the family audience, but there is a broader, some of the newer hotels are more sophisticated and not so, you know, theme park-like. And also what's happening now is a new generation of kind of rock star, rock and pop stars are going to Vegas. Lady Gaga is a big, huge attraction there, and Aerosmith is playing there, and Sting is going to be there in the spring. And you know, and I think there's a kind of, there was a period when the big headliners were kind of went away, and it was all Cirque du Soleil shows and Siegfried and Roy, the you know, the big, the magic shows, the production shows. Now there's a little bit of a comeback of the old style headliners. People like they're younger now. I mean they're more rock groups, but they're, I think that Vegas has gotten a little more cachet with those kind of musical artists now. They kind of want to play Vegas.
I think that's really interesting, because with Lady Gaga, she's a real anomaly to me, because with the other ones you name, Sting, Aerosmith, much later in their careers, been around forever, not releasing new music and new albums to great acclaim. You know, Lady Gaga is so much more in the prime of her career to do something like that. Elton John did a big residency, you know, and it may, those all make sense in the same Elvis way. Lady Gaga is a very interesting one to me, because she's somebody who's younger, but she's also doing something interesting where she's doing two alternating shows, right? She does kind of a rock show, but then she does like a jazzy cabaret type show or something.
Exactly.
Too, right?
Yeah. Right. I have not seen that jazzy cabaret show, but you know, she's a kind of unique artist. You know, she certainly has a lot of retro, and you know, she did an album with Tony Bennett and everything. And she, but you know, she has credibility in the rock world too. So she is kind of unique. There's also people like Jennifer Lopez and Britney Spears. You know, I don't know where you classify them, but
Britney was very much probably like Elvis, right? She needed to reinvent herself, and she had fallen out of the public view and had the just terrible press for a couple of years, and she was really able to reinvent herself. And it seems like sometimes maybe Vegas is also just a comfort for some artists, because you're not traveling all the time. You're just set up in one place. You can kind of make a home out of it too.
That's right. But it's not, you know, it did have a stigma as being a kind of place where you went when you were over the hill.
Sure.
But I think that's changing a little, because when people like Lady Gaga do Vegas, and you know, Madonna was just there, so it's now Madonna's a little later in her career too, but they, you know, but still releasing, you know, big albums. So I think that there's a little bit, there's a little bit of chicness about Vegas that didn't have maybe 10 or 15 years ago. I think now it's kind of considered a little bit cool to play Vegas.
Richard, I have to take a quick break, but I want Roger, Roger, our newsman who spent some time in Vegas, wants to ask you some questions. And I definitely want to talk about the beginnings of Elvis in Vegas and the end of Elvis in Vegas and everything in between. Lots more to do with Richard Zoglin. The book is called Elvis in Vegas, How the King Reinvented the Las Vegas Show. Matt Bubala with you here, 720 WGN. We can't go on together with suspicious minds. And we can build our dreams on suspicious minds. It really is amazing to think back and listen to Elvis and hear the power of that voice, and what a distinct and beautiful voice he really did have. I mean, Elvis was something else, and I think we forget that. And those of us that didn't grow up with Elvis and only hear him once in a while, and he's more of a caricature for us sometimes than he is really a living legend. I mean, I look at Elvis more as the crazy suits and the outfits and the Las Vegas glitz. And when you just hear a song like that and just hear it and not see anything, you really remember the power of that voice and understand why he became the superstar he was. Richard Zoglin's on the phone. He's the author of Elvis in Vegas. Thank you so much for hanging out a little longer with us, Richard.
Sure.
You know what? I'm amazed at when I'm reading about in the book, you know, that the colonel set up the whole first tour through, which wasn't great. And then the colonel is the one who organized everything when he had the big residency in Vegas the second time through. Mm-hmm. And to think about what Elvis went through in between and how his career was failing, and that he and the colonel stuck it together. I know there's been lots written about the colonel and his manipulative ways, and that relationship's been explored, but I don't know it very well. And it's amazing to me. I can't think of a star today who would go through the career trajectory that Elvis had and still be with the same manager.
Yeah.
During the comeback
and years. And he was frustrated in the 60s. The colonel decided after Elvis came back from the Army in 1960, 2 years in the Army, he decided that Elvis would no longer do live performing. He would be a movie star. And Elvis had made a few movies before the Army, and he was going to just make movies and record. And, you know, it kind of worked for a while because Elvis's movies did very well. He had hit songs out of the movies, but he wasn't appearing in concert. And by the mid to late 60s, when all that was happening in the rock world, the Beatles and everything else, Elvis was looking pretty much of a has-been. And Elvis himself was frustrated, and he knew the movies weren't very good. They were getting worse and worse. And the songs he was recording weren't making the charts anymore. And he was really antsy to get back to live performing. But he trusted the colonel. And the colonel, you know, it was a kind of, he kind of went for the easy bucks because he could keep signing Hollywood contracts. The movies made money. And so, but it was just, you know, not good for a creative artist to get to feel just stalled like that in his career. But I think, you know, Elvis trusted the colonel. The colonel basically kind of discovered him. I mean, he had been discovered in Memphis, but the colonel was the one that brought him up to New York and you know, guys signed a big record contract for him, and he guided that career, and it was, you know, a masterful job of he made Elvis the star he was. So Elvis, you know, was a kid from Tupelo, and he didn't he really just trusted Colonel Parker and stayed together with him. Now, after he opened in Vegas, and it was a great success, but after a while he began to get bored with that too, and then I think the strains really started to show in his relationship with the colonel, although we did stay with him to the very end.
Now, Elvis was only doing, you said every 6 months he would go back to Vegas for like a 4 or 6 week residency?
4 weeks.
Four weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So just twice a year for 4 weeks, so only 8 weeks out of the year was Vegas?
That's right. Well, that was a pretty good amount, you know,
sure,
for a performer. And the rest of the time he was touring. Once he got back to live performing, he returned in Vegas, then he was the colonel put him back on a touring schedule very quickly. And so he was not only doing Vegas, he was touring in between, and that got to be a grind. He was, you know, running around the country, even as his health was starting to go bad. And, you know, it was a grind for him, and it was wearing him down, and I think it contributed to the drug use. And there were a lot of enablers around him, and I just think they kind of wanted to milk this cash cow for as long as they could.
We're speaking with Richard Zoglin. The book is Elvis in Vegas, How the King Reinvented the Las Vegas Show. Lots more to come after the news next here on 720 WGN.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog.
Matt Bobala with you here on 720 WGN. We're speaking with Richard Zoglin, author of Elvis in Vegas, How the King Reinvented the Las Vegas Show. Richard, I'm going to let our newsman Roger jump in here to ask you questions in a second. But when Elvis had the reemergence and he started back in Vegas, then he starts touring again, is he releasing new music? And is he regaining the popularity in the mainstream? Or is it just the older folks who loved Elvis all along and the touring that brought him back?
No, he's definitely releasing new music. In fact, you were playing Suspicious Minds there. That was a song he introduced in his first Vegas engagement in 69. And it was released as a record during his Vegas engagement, and it became his first number one hit in 7 years.
Wow.
So he had done some recording the previous January in Memphis, and A lot of those songs were released around that year and the following year. And there were things like In the Ghetto, which was a big hit for him, and Kentucky Rain, which and a bunch of songs that became part of his repertoire in the 70s. So he was definitely back. He had other songs. The Wonder of You was a big hit a year later. So he was definitely back at the top of the charts. I think he gained a lot of his credibility back with the rock, with rock fans and rock critics. They were, you know, they came to that Vegas show in 69 and gave him rave reviews. I mean, Rolling Stone said Elvis was supernatural, his own resurrection in Las Vegas. And so he really, he showed that he could still, you know, rock with the best of them, and he could also do, you know, a broader range of material. He was doing, you know, big ballads, and he was doing gospel, and he was doing country, and he really, you know, his voice was so great, and he could just do the range, you know, the whole range.
It's crazy for me to think that there was a time that Elvis is producing hits, and the Beatles, I guess, were wrapping up really and breaking up around that time. But the Stones and the Who and Led Zeppelin and all of these things are all out in the ether at the same time. That must have been a very crazy time artistically around the world for what people liked and loved.
Yeah, and I think that's why Elvis was feeling kind of left out here, because he was the original rock and roller. He was the guy who really, you know, more than anybody else, created that big change in music back in the 50s. And now the Beatles and all those groups were carrying it on to a different place, and Elvis was kind of left out. And so the fact that he could come back, prove himself once again, and yet, you know, show sort of new range and maturity as an artist, I think was a great achievement. And he wasn't, I think he knew he wasn't, you know, the cutting edge of rock and roll anymore. He was his rock songs were mostly his old, you know, rock hits, and the new stuff he was doing was different kind of thing. But I think that didn't matter to him. He wanted to be out there singing to everybody, the old folks, the younger folks, and you know, he didn't care about necessarily being the coolest guy in rock. He wanted to just be the best singer, and he really was he had a great voice. That was, you know, better than ever in Vegas, in the early years of Vegas. And even when he started to go downhill a little, and he was gaining weight and everything, and he wasn't so healthy, the voice, you can hear recordings, you know, into the mid-70s, the voice was still great. The voice, he never lost that great voice.
Richard, Roger Badish in the newsroom. I spent about 3.5 years in Vegas, 76, early 76 through September of 79, working in broadcast news. So I was there for his last hoorah, so to speak.
But I
was a student of the growth of Vegas. And when he came back to the International, which, if I'm not mistaken, it's been a while, it became the Hilton. Didn't it?
Sure.
That's what I thought. And it was about a long block away from the Strip.
Right. The first hotel, the first big hotel off the Strip in the Convention Center area.
Exactly. And the Convention Center actually is right next to it. I think what happened, because Vegas at the time was a gambler's destination, and it was a California destination. So your stars, the stars that would headline the clubs and the hotels on the Strip, they weren't downtown yet. They weren't downtown until Steve Wynn started doing things with the Golden Nugget downtown when he took over and expanded it. But the stars would only come in on the weekends, because that's when people would bus in from California to hit the tables and see the stars, who then would take off. So now Elvis comes in to inaugurate this brand new hotel and showroom, and he's there every night. Now you've got people from all over the country coming in, the older ones, like you said, who had grown up, now had their families. Now you had to see them come in with their families. Now the hotels had to deal with the young kids. And so they started opening up these video arcades. They started catering to the families with the kids.
Right.
And that's how Elvis opened up that town to a broader audience.
That's right. That's exactly right. And Vegas was kind of starting to have a little trouble in the late 60s because they knew that the younger generation wasn't really coming to Vegas. And Elvis was a way of kind of bridging the gap a little. He was a rock performer, but he catered to everybody. And the hotels, the International Hotel, which became the Hilton, was the biggest hotel in Vegas, with the biggest showroom. That was a 2,000 seat showroom compared to the 700 seat showrooms that most of the other hotels had. So that's why I say Elvis's show was a big kind of rock concert like extravaganza, which was something that was new for Vegas. And it was also the first show to, they had a big enough showroom that they could actually make money from the show.
Sure.
And that was something new. The other business model was that the entertainment was a loss leader and they'd make the money back in the casino. But a lot of the people who came to Elvis's show were not necessarily big gamblers. So they didn't, depend on them as gamblers. They came to the show and a lot of times they would come and they would see several shows. They would come for a whole week of shows. You know, people would plan their trips around Elvis shows, and people would go four or five times and see him repeatedly. And the other thing that Elvis did with that show, I think, is that he made the Vegas show an event. People planned their trips around Elvis to Vegas around Elvis's show. Whereas back in the classic, the 50s and 60s, there were so many stars playing Vegas all the time that you just planned your trip to Vegas and you saw whoever was there, because if Frank wasn't there, you'd see Sammy or Dean or Tony Bennett or whoever.
Mm-hmm.
But Elvis sort of made the Vegas that people planned their trips around Elvis, and so that was, he made the show more of an event.
Well, Richard, was that good for Vegas though? Because when you talk about the early stars and people were there and the shows were free, but they were coming to spend their money and they're going to come gamble.
Yeah.
But if Elvis introduced it to more of middle America, and like you said, they had to make money, or they did make money on the show because those people weren't necessarily going to spend their money in the casinos, was that good for Vegas overall, or did it kind of hurt them?
Well, Vegas, the 70s were kind of a tough period for Vegas because they were losing a lot of the big stars were now not doing Vegas as much. And what happened really was with the rock groups of the late 60s, then by the 70s you're having big arena shows, and not just for the rock groups but even for the big stars like Barbra Streisand and people like that were playing arenas around the country that were huge arenas, and they could pay. Suddenly, Vegas had competition. So people, you could play a concert at a big arena and make more money than from Vegas suddenly.
Yeah.
Because Vegas was having trouble keeping up with the arena business.
But also in 76, 77, you started to see that come back into Vegas. The Aladdin Hotel built a huge venue. Performing arts venue. You know which one I'm talking about.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the name of it, but sure, it was a big rock. They're big sort
exactly.
of rock venue.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and some of the other Dunes Hotel did an expansion. They added rooms, but they also added a bigger showroom. You had Caesar's Palace now with the bigger showroom, and that thing keeps expanding. So they were competing now. So now you went away from these entertainers who could fill a 700, 500 seat showroom when the showgirls weren't on. And you had to have entertainers who could fill a 1,500 or 2,000 seat venue. So
right.
you could book the bigger acts. You could book the Doobie Brothers. You could book some of those acts that could fill that kind of venue.
But the problem was that in the 70s, those kind of acts, a lot of those kind of acts didn't want to play Vegas. I mean, certainly, the Rolling Stones weren't playing Vegas. The hip, Bob Dylan was not going to play Las Vegas.
Sure.
So Vegas was having trouble in the 70s, and I think then it took them a while to sort of make the turn to say, all right, we're not getting the and nightclubs, by the way, this is also what's happening simultaneously, is that the whole nightclub world is going away.
Yes.
I mean, nightclubs were big in the 50s and 60s, but by the 70s there was the nightclubs were basically disappearing, and so that old style of Vegas that Vegas shows were just not happening anymore. And in the new world of the new rock world, Vegas didn't really have a place in that world. Those kind of artists didn't want to play Las Vegas, so it took them a while to sort of reorient Vegas, to reorient itself toward, I think, the family audience, and then they discovered Cirque du Soleil and had a whole different personality.
Yeah.
Do you think why did Elvis go down for the decade before? You said that the Colonel decided you're just going to make movies. Why did the movies get bad? Why was he? And he was still releasing music at the time, though, right? He just wasn't touring.
Oh, sure.
So why?
He was releasing, and the movie songs weren't very good, but he was doing some other albums. He did a big gospel album in 67, but why were the movies? The movies were never very good. Frankly, Elvis was not a good movie actor. They were also very kind of low budget, well, medium budget, but they were.
Probably they just were, quickie, like beach blanket bingo type things, right?
Yeah, I mean,
Elvis
musicals,
this,
very dumb things, very formula, the same kind of thing. They gave Elvis no challenge as an actor, and he never really learned acting. He never had a good director who really taught him how to act, and so so they were just kind of routine formula pictures. And as the decade went on, they weren't even popular anymore by the end of the 60s. I mean, he played out his string in Hollywood. And so luckily for Elvis, I mean, he was able to reinvigorate and, you know, regenerate his career and reinvent himself.
Well, I guess during that time then, when the Colonels just got him making movies, it's kind of, I imagine a lot of artists go through this, you get comfortable, you were successful at one thing, you don't grow and change, and the music, I'm guessing a big part of it was just the cultural change in the mid-60s, right, when the Beatles come out and music changes and Elvis kind of stays Elvis and didn't change with the times at the time.
Right. Yeah, and the few times that in some of the movies they tried to make them a little more with it, you know, and they just were bad movies. And at the time, you know, when Elvis started out, what people forget is that when rock and roll came along in the 50s, it was teenage music, and the people who did it were teenagers or in their 20s, and people thought that rock and roll was a passing fad. The reason that the Colonel told Elvis, you know, if you want to have a career, you're going to have to, you know, get over this rock and roll stuff and go to and a lot of people, if you look back at a lot of the rock and roll singers of the 50s, people like Bobby Darin became a Las Vegas entertainer, Paul Anka, people like that, because they thought, gee, if I'm going to have a long career, I can't be a rock and roll singer forever. Some of them turned into different kind of, you know, nightclub type of singers. And others who could went into movies. And Elvis, you know, did start making movies that did very, very well. So there was, he segued from rock and roll into a movie career, because people didn't think that rock and roll singers would have a career after the age 30. Little did they know.
Yeah.
Today you can have a career into your 70s. But when Elvis played Vegas in 69, he was 34 years old, and people thought he was over the hill. The idea that he could still come back and still be a really dynamic, powerful rock and roll singer was kind of news to people.
What do you think, Richard, is the long-term implicate or the long-term prognosis, I guess, for Elvis's legacy? When I think of Elvis and in Vegas, you know, it's wedding chapels and neon and the suits, the Beatles are still very relevant today. Maybe that's because a couple of them are still alive. Maybe it's the difference in the music, but like I'll still hear Beatles songs all the time on classic rock radio and stuff. Elvis, I never happened to hear on the radio. And Graceland is still around, I know, still does well. And Elvis's image is still alive and he's still incredibly famous. But do you think 30, 40 years from now, people will still talk about Elvis like we still remember other things?
I do. I think that, you know, people will still remember. I still hear his music around, and I've been down to Graceland, and boy, the Elvis fans are still legion, and the websites and the re-releases. There was just a big Sony just released a box set of all of Elvis's Vegas years, I should say his 69 show, about 8 or 9 different shows that he did that year. And there is still a lot of interest in Vegas and Elvis, and kids know Elvis. And a lot of the people I saw in Memphis at Graceland this year in August, when they do Elvis Week, they do a week of sort of tributes to him. Mm-hmm. Their families and you know, people in their 20s. But I think that people also will just remember that he was the guy that really turned music in a new direction back in the 50s. And that, you know, what he did, he was a revolution in music. And I think it's his stuff, that stuff from the 50s still sounds great today. And so does a lot of the Vegas stuff. So, and he was just a great singer, and I think great voices,
endure.
Don't go out of fashion.
Elvis in Vegas, How the King Reinvented the Las Vegas Show. If you're a fan of Elvis, if you're a fan of history or just of the history of entertainment in America or Vegas, a lot of great stuff in here. Richard Zoglin, thank you so much for taking all the time. We really appreciate it.
Can I just say I'm going to be in Winnetka at the book stall?
That's right. You're coming to Chicago.
Yeah. On Sunday, Sunday at 2 o'clock. So if you're around, I'll be there signing books.
The book stall in Winnetka this Sunday, so in 2 days, at 2 p.m.
Yes.
Will you be reading from the book, too?
I'll be talking. I don't read from my books. I just talk and show some pictures.
Excellent. Perfect. In Winnetka at the book stall, 2 p.m. this Sunday, Richard Zoglin live in person. Thank you so much, Richard.
Great to be with you.
And you
too. Thanks a lot.
I hope we talk again. Thank you so much. All right.